Welcome to the Soccer Speakeasy. Today is Thursday, the 28th of April, 2022. Everyone was here on time, so we're ready to go. It's just after 11 in the morning as we record. Per usual, the pod father, Patrick Flaherty's at the dials there. He looks to be awake. Jacob Myers, our fine beat writer for the crew, is here, as is the striker, Kyle Robertson, one of the best photographers in this room. There's no question about that. I'm Mike Arace. Let's get right to it. It's been a week since we recorded. In that span, well, the crew has picked up right where we left off last week. They're 0-3-1 in their last four league games, and there's another loss on top of that in a U.S. Open Cup game at Detroit. That was 2-1. The one goal they scored in Detroit was a penalty kick by Giassi Zardes, who, of course, we'll get to in a minute. And over those last five games, actually, it goes back to six games, the crew has scored one goal in the run of play, and they've been shut out four times. And so let's start with Mr. Zardes, and just as a point of fact, the last goal they scored in the run of play was a extra time goal by Darlington Nagbe, March 20th at New York Red Bull Arena in Harrison, New Jersey. Kyle, how long ago was that?
37 days ago.
39 days. That's woo. That's quite an extended goal drought.
It's 40 days, 40 nights in the desert, something, or close to that.
Feels like feels like 40 years. It feels biblical at this point. And
Exodus might not be too far off.
Yeah. Ooh.
To that end, the crew responded by trading the greatest goal scorer in their history. Not the most goals scored in team history, but clearly and by a large...
That's a good debate.
Well,
would you take Stern on?
That is a good debate, but... the top three goal scorers among them, he has a higher rate of goals than either Brian McBride or who was two.
I said Stern John. Well, you got Jeff Cunningham too.
Jeff Cunningham's two, and so they're all like between 64 and 54 goals.
I think Stern John was only here for like 2 years.
Giassi, I think it was 54 goals.
54, and that's just regular season.
And I think in 161 games, it's a rate of almost half a goal a game. And it is for among the top goal scorers, it is by far the highest rate. So anyway, this is the guy they traded when they're having scoring problems. And Jacob, there were reasons for that.
Yeah, I think if you looked at, let's just start at the beginning of the year, how I kind of traced it is going in, we knew there'd be a battle for a striker position, right? Miguel Berry kind of proved that at the end of last year. And then the reporting came out that the crew had kind of been tinkering as far back as the offseason of just what is the market for Giassi Zardes, mostly driven by, I think, a couple things. One, his contract was expiring. Yep. Two, albeit he can still produce, I think there are other strikers you can get who are better. And two, he's at the end of what's probably the prime of his career. And then also just... he wanted to be in the best position to make a World Cup roster. He even said so as much. And, you know, Mike, you've talked to Giassi over the last 4 years, and he's always good with the media, but brief for sure. And when I asked him after the Colorado game, I jumped on their Zoom call, and he went on over a 2-minute answer, which I think he was kind of eager to explain why he wanted to go to Colorado, or at least jump at that chance. And he explicitly mentioned he has to be in form. You got to be scoring goals to get called onto the World Cup roster. So I think it's a couple things. The crew wanted to maximize what they could get out of him right now. Giassi wanted a place where he would play for sure and try to make a World Cup roster. And the crew saw this window as an opportunity to get another designated player striker.
And the trade details Giassi Zardes to the Colorado Rapids for $300,000 to $1.4 million, depending on incentives. And that's in general allocation money. They also take somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.5 million off the cap with that. Before we get into...
Well, just off the cap, it's like $600,000 or something, but his full salary,
But in any case, there I go using in any case again. I fall into that trap. Patrick, can we edit that out? No, we'll leave it all in, won't we? Let's just... Everyone's going to be embarrassed today by the time we're done. I'll continue. Giassi's artist, we should take a minute here to acknowledge, and we just talked about how he pumped goals. And sometimes fans, because he's sort of a fox in the box, Kyle, and he's not the guy who is creating his own stuff in the final third, you know, he was more dangerous off the ball than on. Some fans are like, geez, do something, you know, and that criticism is always there with that type of player. But he did produce, and on top of that, he was one of the classiest guys among legions of classy people who've gone through the doors of this locker room here in Columbus.
Yeah, I think Crew fans, I think yes, he's one of the best goal scorers, you know, by the numbers. But I always think Crew fans will probably want a couple more goals. I think every once in a while he'd kind of miss an easy one here and there. Easy, quote unquote easy. But I just think he's total class. You know, he's what you want in a pro player who is donating his time and all that. You know, to me, he's in the same level as like a Nick Foligno. You know, I know Nick was here a little bit longer, but he just did stuff, you know, he probably volunteered way more than what we know. You know, I just think of all the stuff with the Nationwide Children's Hospital, and I think the Crew totally misplayed this. You know, I think that if they wanted to get rid of Zardes, they should have done it before the season. Because now they're basically saying, hey, we don't like both of you guys, Barry and Zardes. Obviously, Zardes is gone. But now, hey, we got to bring in a striker because, you know, Barry's not cutting it. So I think they kind of misplayed it. And I think they would have probably gotten more money, Garber bucks, if they've done this in the offseason.
Well,
that's the thing we don't know, right, is what was the market then versus now? And two, which is something they talked about, or Caleb Porter talked about, is what was the market going to be a month from now? And Jossie might have been even more upset because he wasn't getting playing time. So the phrase they used was strike when the iron's hot. But certainly there's a kind of risk benefit analysis.
But
here,
in the offseason, he was still being called up. He played for the U.S. national team, you know,
totally,
in January.
Yeah.
So I think they kind of missed an opportunity.
It's possible that this was something close to the best deal they could have made, and they did have they couldn't wait much longer to do it if they were going to do it. Jacob, they denied that when rumors popped up just prior to the season that he would be open to a move or was something like that, or that he was being shopped.
It was that phrase. 5 weeks before they traded him, they had said that he wasn't being shopped.
Well, they denied it. Yeah, that's one thing. They denied it. And now we'll see what happens next. I want to shout out Giassi. I mean, on the very day Jacob, he was traded, or as the trade was coming together, he and his family were at Children's Hospital donating gifts. In fact, one of his daughters donated her birthday gifts to the sick children in the hospital. And he does that stuff behind the scenes all the time. I think the Foligno comparison is appropriate, and because he's such a good guy. And unlike Nick, who has a bit of the Italian gift of gab, Giassi was a quiet guy. I regret that as locker rooms closed up during the pandemic that, you know, I regret it for a million reasons. One of them is in the Crew circumstance that I didn't have enough chances to talk to guys like Zardes. And again, I think, Jacob, what I want to ask you is if you had to describe this from Giassi's point of view, and you use this phrase yourself, that he did not seek the trade, but he did embrace it when all was said and done. He was involved in it. I think it's a very bittersweet pill for him, and let's hope it works out well.
Yeah, I think I would characterize this as that he didn't approach the front office and Caleb Porter and be like, you got to trade me. Right. But also, you got to be blunt and say, hey, I want to make a World Cup roster, and that means playing.
Right.
And I think the inference there is, trade me to a team where I can. And that's not Jossie asking to be out of Columbus or anything. It's he wanted to go play in the World Cup, and talking to some people around here, and I think I can speak for all three of us, I want to see him in the World Cup roster. I mean, he's such a, as we have said, just a genuine, decent human being. And anybody who's covered him, even at LA Galaxy and stuff, go read this one story. I had read it back in 2017 that Kevin Baxter at the LA Times wrote. It just describes him as a person. He's a good lad.
Yeah. But I will say, though,
he's also 30 years old.
Yeah.
And
but
this
I
is
mean,
his last crack at that World Cup.
But I mean, he needs, I think he needs to be part of the World Cup, you know, the roster, because they have young strikers. You know, Zardes is, you know, older, and I think he can help the younger guys kind of, you know, help, you know, I don't know if it's with video or with whatever, but it's a pretty,
well, that's a
young squad up top.
That's probably a conversation for another day. I would only add to that, that in my conversations with Greg Berhalter, the coach of the USMNT, he's pretty clear about, you know, there's some positions he wants to improve on, that he has to improve on. Striker is lead among them. And, the way he has spoken, the indication is that he's going purely on form. And so we'll see what kind of form Giassi Zardes can recoup in Colorado, which said to him all the right things about how they're going to use him. And he was excited about that.
Yeah. And I mean, to go further into the Cruz decision on this, something that came out of post-game against Kansas City, the 0-0 draw, was that Jossie wasn't in their plans long term. And I guess it makes sense to a degree. And Caleb Porter expanded on that to say he started to see some opportunities he would normally see Jossie finish and he wasn't making. I got to think that's probably a little bit to do with he's coming off the bench. It's right. You know, that I think when he's starting a lot, he finishes chances like that. At the same time, like, he is at the end of his prime, but right. Is he going on a downfall yet? I don't know. Like, Darlington Nagbe is older than him, but he still seems to be in good form. But to kind of sum it up, a 30-year-old striker, when you could probably go out and get one who might be better, and you have one in Barry who's fairly similar, but at a better budget charge. I don't think signing Jossie to a 4-year deal was realistic, and that's what they're trying to do, is sign another guy long term.
Right.
Kyle, part of this obviously was that Caleb Porter wanted another striker other than Jossie Zardes.
With neck tattoos, right?
I that's your words, not mine, but
it's something in crew. He had said, like, yeah. Miguel Barry yeah. needs some neck tattoos because essentially it needs to play like nastier or harder.
Yeah.
And
oh, I remember yeah, that. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what he's referencing.
That was after, again, we're back to this.
I think that was the Philly game.
Yeah.
We're back to this offensive anemia in this conversation. And you know, you're just referencing when it was just a couple weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, when Caleb Porter, frustrated with the lack of scoring, tried to spur his men on by calling them soft. And of course, they responded with no goals and closing the run of play right. in the next 2 or 3 games. So again, we talked about this, I think, last week about what do you do with the with a group where the coach is calling him out and there's a lack of response, which is interesting. One, you wonder right. what the coach is doing, not pushing that button and not getting a response. You wonder what's going on with the players. It's only natural. So he's been on, he says we need to be better at 9, and he moved out. Again, we're back to the irony here. They can't score, Jacob. What do they do next?
What they're saying they need to do is rely on their defense, which to a degree they kind of said in the offseason, like, they're going to be a team that is kind of like 2020, is they're not going to be a top offensive scoring team, but scoring goals right now they aren't. But they are going to rely on their defense until they get this new player in there. That's to say, I don't think they have a lot of faith in Miguel Barry right now. I mean, we saw last year what he could do. I think it's a lot to do with wingers and needing yeah. those guys to score more. But then the next question is, like, who's to blame here, right? Is it the coach? Is it just on-field performance?
Well, Kyle, right. it's
everyone if you can't score goals.
Yeah.
It's the coach, it's the wingers, it's the forwards. I mean, there's no...
Well, I would say, and this is not picking on Miguel Barry, but it's one thing to come off the bench and
right.
he scored 8 goals in how many minutes?
It's like 700 or 800.
Yeah.
It's less than 1,000
yeah.
minutes.
I mean, just extraordinarily productive coming off the bench. It's another thing to be the man.
Right.
And it's yet another thing altogether to be the man where Jossie Zardes isn't right. backing you up anymore. The spotlight is clearly hot upon you.
Well, but I mean, I mean, I think crew fans should be happy that, you know, they decided a fringe World Cup, you know, USA player is not good enough for the crew. And I think that's, you know, if you look at the,
do you accept that though? I mean, do you just out of hand?
I think you have to at this point, right? I mean, until you see who they bring in, you know, if they do bring in someone who is quote unquote better, then I think that will solve a lot of issues. But I mean, I like the fact that they said, hey, we have a guy who's a proven goal scorer. He's a U.S. fringe U.S., you know, national team member, and he's not good enough for us. We need to get better. And I think that's the only kind of positive you look at it. You know, I think, Zardes as a person and as a player, you know, you just hate to see him go. But if in the long run you get somebody else who's better and can score goals, I think they'll be happy with it.
I think it's quite one thing to say, right, like, a fringe national team player on a World Cup roster, right, is the reason we're not scoring goals. And another thing to say is there are other players who we're pretty confident we can go out and get.
Well, I'm saying like that they want, like, I'm just saying as in like
we the, being
the talent. Crew. Yeah. The crew wants somebody better than a fringe U.S. national team member. Like, I think up front. Right. Like,
yeah. But then they also think that's going to solve all the problems the way that they've been talking, which I'm not so sure that's
no,
the case.
But if you lose Zardes and you replace him with someone that they think is better, like
the person has to be
optics,
better, which
right,
you got
right,
at
right,
your column.
Yeah. Yeah. Is what I'm saying is like, I think as a crew fan, you have to be happy at that singular point. Well, is that
you're going to use the ambition word, yes, that everyone throws around,
that they want somebody better than a fringe U.S. national team member. And I think that's progress in the way the crew history has been and the way that they're going.
Okay, Jacob.
Right?
The coaching staff was retooled. So Caleb has all his guys in there now. He now has presumably what he wants in space enough, salary cap flexibility and allocation money to add a forward that he wants. We can't say flatly that he didn't want Zardes, but we can say Zardes was traded. And so this is another, you could say, this is another indication that all right, Caleb's going to put has his people in place, or they're coming into place. This is wholly his thing now. And he's, you know, like if you recall before the season, he said, well, you know, what can I do about scoring if I only have a certain budget? And of course,
oh, yeah,
this looks like, I mean, this looks like a direct response to that. Like, oh, he, all right, where I'm going with this is management has been explicit. Tim Bezbachenko specifically, the president and general manager, that they're going to use this cap space and allocation money. And I don't know, maybe Jimmy will dig a couple nickels out of his couch too and throw him down I-71 to get a play, to upgrade,
yeah,
their forward position, be it with a pure striker or someone who can play up top or on a wing, but an offensively gifted player. And to that end, there are already some rumblings.
Yeah, there's one player that have been reported out of Argentina. I can't confirm this myself, but this was a couple reports. Player for Estudiantes named Gustavo Del Prete or Prete. He's 25 years old, a forward, has scored 3 goals with 3 assists in 9 appearances so far this year. So that's about the age that I assume the crew would go after a certain player. The Argentinian league is a league that tends to offshore a lot of players to MLS. To me, it's just what we'll see, what type of player, whoever they get, if it's this guy or another guy they get in there.
Well, they have to target more than one player if they're shooting,
yeah,
for an
and what they had
transfer,
said, yeah,
because it takes, there's a lot that goes into, right, it. I mean, there's the negotiations with the agent, there's negotiations with the team over a transfer fee. There's a pile of paperwork, immigration paperwork and visa stuff to do. These things don't happen overnight, and crew fans know this because, you know, when they've gotten guys in here in the past, that, you know, where is he? It's going to be another 3 weeks. And that was, you know, just parenthetically, that was one of the reasons why they said they're or at least suggested that the move was done now. The current transfer window closes May 4th, which is coming right up. And There's not going to probably be enough time to jam someone in here given all these factors.
Right. And even if they can, you have games up until the 28th, May 28th. Maybe the player's not even here by then.
Right.
And then you have a month off till you play.
Plus, right. They had to clear a DP slot, which the Giassi trade does that. You have to have that clear as you head into any transfer window looking to acquire a DP. Right. And that's clearly, as stated, what they're trying to do. So what I'm getting at here is you're looking at the summer transfer window, which opens July 7th. So you're looking at somewhere in July, and you can assume that they already have players they targeted and even gotten down into the process of anticipating something happening and even doing some of the paperwork beforehand.
Yeah, they even, and in talking this week and just the things that I've, you know, checked in on, the crew had been assembling a list of targets they've been looking at. Scouts have been to see these players. Their hope was to get one in by this window, but I think the focus, as you said, was always on the summer window, just given how short of a time they had going into the end of this window. Now, then the thing is, you only have half the season, a little less than half the season after that. So Miguel Berry here is going to be relied upon, but I'm curious to see how much action we're going to start to see going into this last week here of this window.
Kyle, is Hurtado going to explode onto the scene now?
For crew two.
Oh, man.
I mean, who's backing up Berry now?
Yeah, you'd say him.
Yeah.
So it's
Barry's going to get a lot of 90 minutes. Yeah. What I thought was,
do they have to change the way they play for a while here to kind of keep their finger in the dike?
They're
not scoring at all.
Well, and on that note, they did this past week because 4-3-3. Lucas didn't play. Yeah. 4-3-3. Yeah. If Lucas is available this week, which he didn't practice on Tuesday, we'll see if he does Friday when we get to watch them stretch their hamstrings for 15 minutes. But we'll see if he's able to play. Even if not, Caleb Porter said he liked Aiden Morris, Nagbe, Artur as midfield three. James Igbekeme, normally a central midfielder, was playing on the left wing. They can do a lot of different things. I feel like they'll stick with that three. But if you do, and Lucas is available, like, how does that exactly work? Do you just roll the dice and put Lucas on the left and play him more in the middle, given that Etienne and Yeboah haven't done a whole lot on either wing?
I think at this point, it's interesting. You try, right?
if your goal is to, score goals, but probably to do it on the counter more so and be more of a defensive team, maybe you go with that midfield three, be just rock solid there. They're all pretty similar players in Morris, Nagbe, and Artur to a degree.
It's good to see Morris out there running around and mixing it up.
His energy and motor, it's really fun to watch. I think he deserves to be out there, absolutely. So, why not go with that? And you can get maybe Lucas higher on the ball if you're playing more in transition.
Is Morris 100% back? I mean, I know they were kind of taking it a little easy, but is he...
Yeah, he's good to go, yeah. I mean, he started Tuesday and then Saturday, so I think so.
He's playing angry, yeah.
I like it.
How is Lucas Zelarayan health-wise? Yeah.
So it's an IT band issue on, I can't remember what knee now, right or left. It's one of the two, right?
Yeah. maybe the third.
the Red Bulls game. And they did some like plasma or platelet kind of injection to try to tamp down the inflammation on it. So I don't know. We'll see if he's ready to go or not, but it's early in the year. It's probably good to just
rest.
Not rest.
But at the same point, then he points.
Or rest him. Yeah, right. Yeah, you can't fall too far behind before you get your DP savior striker.
They're now in 12th place in the league, just ahead of New England and Cincinnati. I mean, there's Cincinnati's breathing down their neck. Woo! The other thing I was saying about...
Get your wooden spoons out.
Circling back to the DP, I mean, I think one of the elements that we should mention at least is that all indications are they're going big on this. I mean, and it is a DP.
That's why that rumor of that player who I just mentioned from Estudiantes, like, Yes, we, as we talked before this, believe it to be true. Not, we haven't confirmed it ourselves, but it just seemed like there was evidence that they made an offer. But it doesn't seem like the big offer that they have teased.
Well, you know, and I say going big, and I guess what I mean by that is Lucas De La Ryan big? Probably not. They're going to spend some DP money here.
More than Yaya Boa and Luis Diaz, but less than Lucas El Rayon. Yeah,
I think that's probably right. And who knows? Maybe they'll surprise us, and I'd be the first to pat them on the back if they go very big. You know,
hasn't went pretty big this offseason for the Browns.
I know. It's like, geez.
Different budget.
I know. I'm just saying.
That's another column altogether. Look it all up at dispatch.com.
The Browns have their own sportsbook partner now. So look at that.
Well, as we mentioned, 12th place upcoming. DC is here in the new Crew Stadium Saturday at 7:30.
They just fired a coach.
There you go. What do you mean by that? Or what are you trying to infer here?
They played very well last week, and I think this is a team who will maybe come in with a little life to them.
I guess we should talk about that. Is how long is Caleb Porter's leash?
Oh,
that's a tough question for me to answer. But I mean, they got to win this game. I don't say that he's going to be fired if they lose, but it just. The more losses, the more that's going to be a question looming over this club.
Do you think he'll make it to the when they bring in the transfer?
It all depends how they do here.
I've always said
in that, the perspective too that like, look, we don't get to see everything or we don't know everything that is happening in training behind the scenes, stuff like this, a little maybe nagging injuries or chemistry problems, what have you. There's a lot more info that the front office is digesting when making this type of decision than we are just looking at kind of results and how they play.
I'm going to say I don't know because I don't know how the mechanism works. And the reason I say that is
the other thing is who do you bring in?
That's always the thing that a lot of people forget is like, you get frustrated with the coach, get him out of here. And it's like, well, okay.
Who's next?
What's the alternative? Because
for example, DC United, the guy who's their interim has been an assistant for a long time there.
And it's
and Ezra Hendrickson and Ben Cross, who was brought on in 2019 and was with the academy. Both those guys are gone now.
Right. So again, Caleb has all his guys here and it's on him. There's no groomed successor. And that brings me back to, you know, the thing that I've always wondered about and why I don't understand the mechanism of this front office. And that is that if you recall, when the team was saved just prior to the whatever it was January 6th, January 9th, 2019 introduction of the new coach and general manager. Well, as those hirings went down, in December, Porter was hired first and presumably by ownership before the general manager was hired.
The other way around.
And when you have a situation like that, when the GM didn't hire his own coach, you always have to wonder who has the power. And you have to wonder how ownership views that power structure. You know, is Caleb their guy? Is Bez their guy? Do they just say work it out together? Does Bez Pachenko, given the fact that he is the president and general manager titles, does he actually have the juice to make a move on a coach if he feels it's appropriate? Not saying it's appropriate right now. I just wonder how that string is pulled. And honestly, I don't know. Obviously, there are a lot.
Who do you think calls the shots?
I think Cleveland ultimately does. Personally, that's the way it looks to me. Jacob, how does it look to you?
I mean, they hired the coach, right? So I think you look at that.
Well, so we'll see. We can say this, that this was a season where, once again, there was a lot of promise to it, and it was touted by the team itself.
Three games in look great.
Yeah. And this was a season where it was imperative for them. We'll circle back to our preseason stuff. Imperative for them to at least have a home playoff game, which meant competing near the top of as the soccer people say, the ladder.
Do you think the championship that Porter won here, how long has that expired? Like, you can't fire him like after you won. But
again, how do they view the Campione's Cup? Is it you know what I mean? Like to me, it was like you're obviously referencing the MLS Cup title in 2020. Yes, that buys him some time. Has he used up? Has he used up the interest or the balance that was deposited in his in the coaching bank in December of 2020? That's another good question. I don't know, and I don't even know how that family feud, Campione's Cup, figures into it. You know, that made for a television championship trophy.
I got nothing to add. I think you said it there.
Yeah. So DC at home on Saturday, at New England on the 7th. New England struggling. Probably because of their extracurricular matches.
They got injuries as well.
And then at New York City FC, your defending champions, on the 14th. And then home against LAFC on the 21st, which is on our sleeves day. And that was a charity campaign that was fronted by Jossie Zardes. Still a worthy thing. Maybe they should push that to... But is Colorado in town this year? I
don't think. They go to Colorado.
Yeah, okay. Anyway.
That was the first thing I looked up.
So this is a big one. DC, old rival here, yep. Kyle. Old traditional rival at home here Saturday in a game where the Crew might want to score first.
How about they work on just scoring?
Well, the first one would be, I mean, that would take a lot of pressure off just getting one early like they concede. For sure they've would. Been conceding early. But that's it. You guys have anything else to add?
No, I think we covered it all.
Oh, I don't think we covered it all, but...
Hey, good luck to Seattle, right, next week?
You want to say that to Crew fans who somehow have some hatred of their fan base?
That's
at least
be,
some,
yeah.
that's some good, group
that's
going
to be a tough road for them.
Yeah, but can you believe that penalty in the, was it 99th minute?
Yeah, soft penalty. Yeah.
I didn't see that. I was watching the second half, but I missed
the... I thought the first penalty Pumas got was soft, and then I thought the one at the end that Seattle got was soft. But yeah, they came back from 2-0 down and tied it 2-2.
Oh, they did?
So they're going home with Marshawn Lynch leading the cavalry.
I did see the VAR where they did a reshoot on the kick.
Yeah,
When the Seattle goalie came off the line, which, you know, I like.
Hardcore CONCACAF.
In real time, I mean, that's something that Kyle's favorite goalie in the world almost never does, you know. It doesn't look like it. Anyway, that's it. We're getting windy at this point. For Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, our producer, and for Jacob Myers, our fine Crew beat writer, check out all the stuff at dispatch.com. Kyle Robertson, too, any number of terrific photo galleries. I'm Mike Arace. I'm just a helper. Thanks for joining us. And Patrick, kick us out of here.